wife keeps telling me I need to turn my wardrobe over more often than I do. I don't know if you noticed that picture of all those people at the Meat Animal Research Center talking about the initiation of the weight rate or the 2000 Bull Project, but I'm wearing the same shirt. So, fortunately, that was just taken this past summer, right? Anyway, Mark did mention that the emphasis is going to be on the weights for their initial publication of information from this project that they're doing in Discovery. And it seems logical that we should follow up with some further populations of animals to look at other issues that come post-discovery. And in conversations regarding that, Mark presented at the Genetic Prediction Workshop in Kansas City this idea we've been talking about relative to doing a weight trait project in the field with seed stock producers relative to concepts of validation and further study of markers. Now, the way I'd like to introduce the importance of doing something like this is actually to revisit the presentations we had the other day and talk a little bit about where we've gotten to and what we might need to do. In 2008, I talked up in Calgary about the fact that we're in the midst of a fairly important transition, and that it's not only important, but as Mike Goddard pointed out the other night, it's also rather troubling because it has the opportunity to cause some changes in the industry the way we view it. But we should be engaged in looking at this transition and engaged at looking at those possible changes so that we have an opportunity to moderate them and to actually direct them. So what's happened since then? I was very enthusiastic last year. I was enthusiastic because I thought we had a tool that was important to us. It changed the way we were looking at discovery. And we come here, and there's some interesting things that have occurred. We have this large panel, a very large number of animals genotyped with the 50K panel has occurred in this past year, and the number is absolutely amazing how many animals we've applied this technology to. We've analyzed EPDs and we've analyzed phenotypes for those animals, and Dorian's pointed out, correctly so, that none of that has made its way to the field yet, but there is a lot of things coming out of these analyses that we will expect to see in the field, hopefully, before the next BIF. So we've done a lot of genotyping and a lot of association studies. We're on the fringe of getting some of that out. We've also identified and actually clarified in our own minds many issues that need to be addressed in the realm of discovery. And I think Dorian has given us a metric next year to come back and look at how we're doing relative to the concepts of discovery. And that's, let's take a summary of what we saw this year in the traits of interest and importance, and next year let's compare how we've done in this genetic trend or annual trend of the association between the SNP panels and the breeding values we're trying to predict. But the discovery issues that have come out of this that I think are interesting is how many animals do we actually need to do? And Mike Goddard pointed this out the other day. And for a trait that's moderately heritable, 0.3, if we wanted to achieve an accuracy of 0.5, we need 4,000 animals. Now think back on the populations that Mark was telling you about in our most prolifically phenotyped population at the Meat Animal Research Center. And we just barely got to 4,000 animals. This rings a little bit of a caution to us that it's going to be difficult to achieve these levels unless we start to collaborate with each other and put resources together. I think one of the more interesting ones you've heard a lot about is now, how do we handle breeds? Mike told us that we're often disappointed when we go outside the population we've looked at in terms of discovery when we did validation. Jerry Taylor cautions us as well that we're going to have to look at different ways of doing a crossbreed studies than maybe we've thought of in the past. We have this issue of phenotypes versus EPDs. Meat Animal Research Center and the Weight Trait Project has both of those kinds of information available to them that we can be looking at. In the dairy, they've leaned extensively on that, as you've heard, and we've only used that particular approach sparingly. Now, in some cases, that's because we did not have the DNA repositories being built through a nice little channel that they have in the dairy industry through young sire progeny testing, but that's an excuse. And we were challenged the other day that we need to do a little bit more of the former. And the challenge was, let's build repositories. And I agree with this, and you heard an offer to pay for running the 50K panel on semen samples if you send them in. We have a grant that focuses on getting that kind of information done. And so in this next year, I think the industry ought to put an emphasis on getting those samples there. But let's not duplicate them. I wonder, when Kent talked the other day about how many EPDs we have on Angus sires running around the country, it'd be interesting to see how many times we've genotyped a particular Angus bull at $150 to $200 a crack. We need to get around that and move forward with sharing our resources. Dorian then talked a little bit about getting down to an affordable panel, one that had fewer SNPs, and then when you go down to fewer SNPs, you run into the problems we encounter when we start to get fewer and fewer genes that are associated with those traits in the prediction equation. And so there's a lot of research that needs to be done in that. This past year, to me, has had a focus in this. Application of methodology to heavily genotyped animals to the phenotypes that were collected on those individuals. I think the conclusion from yesterday morning is we do not have enough animals, nor do we have enough SNPs. But those are solvable issues. You heard there's going to be an effort underway to increase the size of the SNP panel, so that'll come along. We've also got animals we can continue to phenotype and share resources on, so that's not going to be an issue for a long period of time. We do have, I thought the other day, some very appealing results coming out of the initial analyses. We need to address this and get that kind of information out to the industry so we can get over this statement that commercialization is yet to happen. And I think we will start to see those find their way into the profiles that are being offered by the different DNA companies. And in this next year, I hope we're also going to see the analyses come to conclusion on many of those traits we've been promised over the last couple years as the research has unfolded in things like animal health and healthfulness of the product. So a lot of things have happened, and I think this year was a great year. I'm calling it year one after the advent of the 50K panel. But this was an interesting question, and Dave, I think you asked it. It's fine for us to say we're starting to get these associations, creating these opportunities for molecular breeding values, but how are we preparing for that? Getting them into genetic evaluation, getting them into the selection process. Are we preparing for them well? Well, there are a lot of things we still need to understand. Riding up the elevator, I got into a conversation with somebody who told me, well, their assessment was that we don't have a real good organizational strategy for approaching all of this stuff. And I would have skipped my floor and rode a few more floors with them to tell them that that wasn't the case, but they got off before me, so didn't think they'd appreciate me following them to their room. So, we do have some things we need to deal with. We have a tremendous year behind us in discovery and gaining knowledge on how to analyze data. We have a challenge to increase each year the covariances or the correlations with the traits that we're looking at. And so we can think about what are some of the next steps as discovery continues to unfold. I think what we need to do is start looking at the other problems associated with the DNA technology relative to getting it from the discovery phase into the selection programs that you're looking at. And I view the Weight Trait Project as being precisely that, an organized effort with different parts of the community of producers and breed associations, DNA companies, and scientists coming together and sharing ideas as to how to get by what appears to be, on occasion, barriers that we have ignored. And so we sent out a call to build a consortium, a collaboration, whatever you want to call it, of associations and other organizations to help us in terms of addressing all the issues post-discovery. I want to break this slide down a bit. My apologies to the Hereford Association. They wouldn't let me screen scrape their slide. So we haven't got their particular logo. The academics. Three organizations are going to be involved in this process. The U.S. Meat Animal Research Center is going to be the discovery, and then hopefully, through the international collaboration, the opportunity will exist, as Mark talked about, to doing validations across countries and in other opportunities with the 2000 Bull Project to do validations there. Field implementation, the NBCEC is taking the role in. I'm in charge of that, and before any of you doom the project to failure, because that's an important part of the project, we have hired Bonnie Long in the back of the room to actually handle the movement of the DNA cards, the DNA information, from producers to DNA companies and whatnot. The data analysis we're going to have done mostly at the University of Nebraska. We have put a research postdoc at that particular center through the Whole Genome Enabled Animal Selection Project, and part of that postdoc's responsibility is looking at strategies for integration of the molecular information into genetic evaluation. We also have the extension component associated with any activity where we want to transfer technology. And in this case, we're going to capitalize on two different entities. One is the University of California at Davis, and I'll come back to that in a minute, and then the NBCEC education team that consists of or is run by Dare Bullock. We're going to produce educational material, the workshops that we typically have, and we have our first one in June 22nd and 23rd. It's in Hastings, Nebraska. And we're going to be talking about this project and other things related to the 50K panel to producers. But Jerry mentioned the other day that there's been a tremendous amount of money coming into the beef industry from various grants, the Whole Genome Enabled Selection Grant being one of them. But Allison Van Enenam here in UC Davis has secured a grant to do a little research project on the applications of DNA into commercial ranches, and from that to develop extension materials, and she's going to be involved in this project as well, helping coordinate the education that we need to have carry along with this. Now, the breeds that were selected, and this was a difficult choice as to how to proceed, were those that were in the cycle 7, mainly because that comprises much of the discovery data. And so the breeds Mark had gone through with you that are involved, they're shown here. The role of the breed associations is going to vary as we go across the project. First of all, they were to identify for us producers in the region around Nebraska. We wanted to stay in the Nebraska region with this project to begin with. They have identified for us these producers. Later, the breed associations are going to provide us the data and the EPDs on the animals within those herds. And they'll start to play a role in databasing the MBVs, and in this particular case, genotypes, because these genotypes will be available to us after they're run on animals. Genetic testing company involved will help facilitate the creation of the reduced panel chip with us, and they will provide the genotyping service for the project, returning the information to both the breed associations and the producers. The seed stock producers that we've asked to be involved from the seven breeds are collecting hair samples for us on animals in this year. In fact, right now they're collecting hair samples on the cows, and in the fall they'll be collecting the hair samples on their calves. And in fact, we have a couple of producers in here who are doing that now. Where are they? Charlie? Kirk? Raise your hands. Don't be bashful. We have in total 18 seed stock providers, 4 university herds that have joined the project, and we were shooting for 1,000 animals per breed. We have 7 breeds, and we haven't included the Herefords up there yet. And as you can see, the enthusiasm for catching or collecting DNA for us by these producers exceeded our expectation, and we have in planned right now or expecting over 12,000 samples in this region, 6,000 on calves and 7,000 on cows. We were looking for 1,000 per individual. When we asked them to be involved in the project, we only promised them that we would do genetic or genotyping on the male calves from the breed they were nominated by. So if they were nominated by Gelti, we would go ahead and do all of their male calves this year with the funding that we have. Many of them had other breeds and had crossbreds. And we heard a question asked the other day in the main session, what about our crossbreds? How is this going to work in those individuals? So we asked them if they would voluntarily collect all the animals on their ranch, regardless of the breed or whether it not was or not a crossbred. And in fact, that's where that increased number of samples have come. We've gotten virtually everyone in the project are collecting those. Here's the distribution of our collaborators. You can see we stayed relatively close to the state of Nebraska to keep our environment somewhat comparable. That does not yet include one or two that we're still following up on, but we do have a nice concentration, and the star there somewhere in the middle of the state represents Nebraska. Now, Mark addressed this from the perspective of discovery when we're looking at weight traits. You might ask the question, why pick one trait like that? I was very surprised in talking to the producers. Many of them commented that, boy, now you're really on to something. Because they're looking at yearling bulls that they want to improve the evaluation of relative to weight. And many of them commented the importance of weight in their selection program. So that I found that to be an interesting aside. We looked at this as a non-threatening trait in terms of commercialization because nobody out there was really racing to get the best weight trait panel out in front of the producers. Obviously, if they were, with the trait and the amount of information that's available on it, we'd have seen that quite earlier than this. So we felt this was a non-threatening environment. But perhaps most important to me is the fact that if we can design a panel that explains much of the variation or a large portion of the variation for a particular weight trait, then maybe we can demonstrate to the producers in their own cattle, on their own ranch, the efficacy of that test. And when you think back to the early days of looking at EPDs, that's precisely what we did. The early focus was on traits that they could look at, that they could make comparisons, make breedings, and make judgments on the value of what they were seeing. It's a lot different than the way we approached the molecular component because we went after traits that was not an obvious place for them to make their own judgment on the value of that particular panel. The way we're going to approach it is if necessary, it's going to be a single trait, weaning weight. However, if we can explain a satisfactory amount of variation, and don't ask me to give you the number right now, for that trait, we may add the yearling weight and later on maybe some additional SNPs for birth weight that might be independent of growth. As we mentioned, the U.S. Meat Animal Research Center is working on the discovery populations right now. We're hoping for some international collaboration from Australia and Canada to help validate that panel. When we talked about validation the other day, or Allison Van Inenam did, she talked about the fact that we're looking at whether or not a trait works, or a panel works, and that's either in the internal validation or the external validation that occurs within a company and outside of a company. She showed you our website. I'll just flash it back up there again because I was supposed to have a different picture over there. We now have one of an advisor, but I got the wrong one loaded, so I'll move on from there. But we are moving to the proportion of the genetic variation. And Dick Kwas is going to talk about that in a little bit, some simulation work that we've done. Mark Talman has put an article with the rest of us on it in the proceedings. And the Australians have actually done a validation where they put this proportion of the genetic variation accounted for by a test on their website. Now, this means we're going to need a different kind of data set, a larger data set, to actually start accurately estimating those proportions. But that's okay because that's one of the steps needed to get these MBVs into a genetic evaluation model. So if we're going to look at integration of the MBVs, we're going to need to understand the correlations between the MBVs and the breeding values on the traits of interest. And so this can be looked at not only as providing a useful statistic to judge a panel, but also as a step towards integration. Integration, I think, is very important. My rationale for saying that is think about what was accomplished with the 50K that we heard about the other day with the Angus population. And for those of you who are in that session, I had asked the question, we've used much of the resources, at least in terms of high-accuracy EPDs, in that breed. So how are we going to generate this trend that Dorian wants us to generate within that breed? It means we are, for the short term or long term, still going to have to look seriously at our data collection systems, integration of these MBVs in there, and the joint use of that information to improve the accuracy of the traits. Now, to show you, this isn't something that we're thinking about doing. There are actually two programs that are looking into this. Dorian received a USDA grant in bioinformatics, and in that grant, he's looking at a process of bringing EPD information into molecular breeding values. You've heard last year in Calgary that Steve Catchman at the University of Nebraska has been looking at how to integrate molecular breeding values into the EPD calculations. And in fact, when we look at some of the work that was presented yesterday morning and some of the things that we're seeing going on in the industry, it's likely that in the next year or two we will see a system that has integration of the molecular information in the genetic evaluation. The integration work is going to be done at the University of Nebraska. We will have both the MBVs and the genotypes, so we can look at two strategies for integration of the molecular information. Our focus will be on the yearling bulls. This also allows the breed associations that we're working with to start to address with the partners in the DNA industry and with their producers how to get this information into their databases and how to move it into genetic evaluation systems. And I think what I'm trying to show here is we're looking at developing a project that's following up on discovery that starts to actually force us into the logistics of moving information around and creating a molecular-assisted breeding value. There's other things we can look at as we start down this process. We're going to have 50K information on some of the sires represented in this population because many of our producers are using prominent AI bulls. Many of those AI bulls have 50K genotypes on them, and hopefully some of them are in the USDA resource that we can use. And we can look at this issue that we heard talked about, or at least this opportunity we heard talked about the other day, in terms of having different types of panels available. Molecular breeding values predicted from large panels, molecular breeding values predicted from reductions of those large panels. We can look at the integration both within breed and across breed. It bothers me a little bit that we seem to be focusing on the MBV and EPD integration and stepping back a little bit from working on this multi-breed genetic evaluation that for many years we felt was an important direction for the industry. I think we have to think about this in terms of a multi-breed problem and getting information, both phenotypes and molecular breeding values from producers in this project will allow us to do this. How we're going to approach this is we're going to treat each of the subset of producers that are involved as a miniature breed. So our six Gelfi breeders will be the Gelfi breed as far as we look at it relative to this project. And we're going to do genetic evaluations for that small group with and without the molecular breeding values or genotypes, with the 50K genotypes without, hopefully demonstrating the value of adding that information into it. And we're going to do it on animals they can look at. We hope to have this calf crop done in terms of genotyping and many of the analyses done while this calf crop is relevant. So, Mark, I know when those MBVs need to be done. Not in the foreseeable future. Timing. We're going to collect the DNA on all of these calves this year. As I mentioned, the cows are being collected now. The calves will be collected in the fall. We're planning to genotype those individuals with the 384 SNP panel in the fall and winter. The validation analysis, which will be done within each herd with their data to demonstrate to each one of the producers who've consigned to this project how well that particular MBV panel worked in their herd, we hope to have done by this winter. The genetic analysis that I talked about in terms of an evaluation, we hope to have some information on that in the various scenarios by BIF next year. That leads us to the next component. What we've talked about here is looking at a validation of discovery, trying to get right back into the same environment as close as we can as the cattle at the Meat Animal Research Center were raised in. That then brings to us the question of how well does this work if we go into various other kinds of environments around the country. And so the following year, our plans are to expand this project, looking into different areas of the country and putting together resources like we did at the Meat Animal Research Center. So for those of you out here who aren't living in the Northern Plains, you might expect to hear from me next year. We're going to look at the MBV by environment interactions. We're going to look at that interaction by breed. We're going to do a comparison across these regions using the Angus breed, which will be more widely dispersed than all our six others, we think, in the areas that we're looking at, and building resources of other breeds around that. Then comes the question, what about the breeds we've left off in this first phase of it? And our plans are to hopefully start to get a few of those herds in these different environments represented so we can broaden this investigation as to what happens when we get outside of the discovery population closely related as it is to other breeds. So let's think about where we were and where we are now and what I hope we can present to you next year. I think it was a very good year. We had a lot of interesting things going on in the analytical arena. Just the fact that now there is a pipeline process that was built by Iowa State for efficient analysis of the 50K, I think was a quantum leap in our ability to look at this particular type of information. We did a lot of animals, we've done a lot of associations, and there's a lot more coming down the pipe as our research populations in health and healthfulness and other traits mature over this year. But as it always happens, when we learn something, typically what we learn is that there's something else we don't know. And there was a lot of issues brought up that I think addressing this year in the discovery phase are going to be very important. This next year, what I'd like to see us do is to build repositories. So I encourage once again everybody in the breed associations to start thinking about how to organize semen sample collections, and as Dorian said yesterday, get them into the hands of people doing the molecular work. Focus on collaborations, the international and both national. We have a lot of data sets floating around out here. We need to get them together and utilize those data sets in order to get better estimates. And we need to start developing seriously programs for outreach that at least get the concept of the technology and how it's going to be used in front of the masses. This project I'm very excited about, quite simply because it's going to force us, now that we've committed to our 18 producers that we're going to do this, to investigate outside of discovery all the issues I think we've sort of been ignoring over the last couple of years. And with that, I'll close.
Do we have any questions for John? I've got one, John. Is there any more reason to be concerned?